Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And today we are here with a very, very good friend of mine, Emily.
So hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So Emily and I were friends way back in childhood. I grew up with Emily. Our parents were close, part of the same church, Cornerstone Church on Grand Island, which used to be Whitehaven. We're probably going to refer to it as Whitehaven.
Yeah, I will probably say Whitehaven.
That makes more sense to us.
No.
Again, you can't just like buy a new sign and boom, rebrand your church, but same people, same building. Anyway.
Right.
But yeah, so Emily and I grew up at Whitehaven Road Baptist Church together. Our parents were friends, very, very involved in church together. But Emily's parents were really safe people to me. Her house was safe. She was safe. She was very much part of my bright world, as were her parents. You know, her parents didn't know that these things were going on. So I think, you know, you can attest to the fact that since the podcast came out, it's been a little bit earth-shattering for them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just knowing a lot of the people that we've named, a lot of people involved, things like that.
So I think we have to acknowledge that it is very confusing for people to get their head around the idea that these people were all friends with each other. They were inhabiting the same church, attending a lot of the same events, but yet there were some people involved in all this dark world stuff and some people who literally had no idea that it was happening. And that's very hard to make any sense of. And I mean, maybe there's some research out there that I don't know about that tries to explain that, but I think the only thing that makes any sense is to recognize that the offenders and the traffickers are pretty intuitive people who had a lot at stake here. And so they were paying very close attention to whatever subtle indicators there might have been about whether or not this was a person who would be receptive to the things of the dark world, and whether or not this was a child who could be kept quiet, who is vulnerable to these things. So they were really paying attention and picking up on stuff. And so they must have picked up on things, Emily, from your parents that would have suggested that this would not be something that would fly with them.
Right. I remember a time that My parents would have this diners club, so they'd go out to dinner. And there was this one time that Ron told my dad, you know, about what had happened to you and that you were raped by your uncle. And my dad's instant reaction was, what are we going to do about it? And he was just, you know, enraged and just so put off by everything. And having Ron not react that same way, like meet him there. Like, I'm going to do whatever you need me to do. I've got your back, you know, whatever you need. And just to have it just shut down, no, it's okay, it's okay. It was just, like, huge red flags to my dad to be like, what? Like, who wouldn't just go?
Yeah, I know when he explained it, or he described it to us the other night, we had dinner with them, that it was, like, a strong arming. Like, he was, like, ready to jump into action, as any reasonable father would be,
right?
That you would just be like, okay, what are we doing, you know? And the strong arm of, like, my dad just basically saying, like, no, like, settle down, like, it's fine. And then to find out, I actually just found out recently that there wasn't even, like, a police report filed at that time. So it's not even like my dad was saying to him, like, well, the police are handling it, and so, like, we can't go do things and get in their way. There was nothing. They were just nothing, right? It was like this information had, I had disclosed this information, and it was just nothing. And that's not a normal reaction. And I think your dad, I know your dad definitely picked up on that.
And similarly, when he came back for the funeral, my dad's like, what are we doing to protect Kate?
Right. I also think that anybody who's met your dad knows, like, not to mess with him. But I do feel like anyone listening who knows Emily's dad is like, well, that's a pretty clear, like, clearly. Yeah. So the reason that we are interviewing Emily today and talking with her is, you know, farther than just we like to hang out and she's a pretty awesome person. But unfortunately, after the podcast came out, Emily came to me, texted me and said, you know, that she had some memories that she wanted to share with me and kind of compare notes a little bit and see what the overlap might be. So we'll turn it over to you to jump
in. Yeah, I have like weird blanks in my memory. I don't know if you described them as aftershocks or I heard someone and it was like, that is the perfect way to describe that. Like, I remember in second or third grade, we were on the south end of the island. I know it was in that house. I have very like, I remember performing oral sex. Like I knew how to do it. I did it. Which is just like, I'm working through it in therapy and my therapist being like, no, that's not what kids do. They don't, this is not like playing doctor. This is not a normal thing that you just know how to do. And this isn't like, I knew the word, or I've seen a picture of it or anything like that. It was like, I knew how to do it. Which is just disgusting.
That's not typical. That is not normal. You know, show me yours. I'll show you mine. Playing doctor. Like there's some amount of normalcy in that for kids, the curiosity aspect of the bodies, but that is not the same as sex acts, and that's important for people to understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also have these reoccurring snippets of memory as a child, like from second grade all the way through high school, that of me being tied up by my hands above my head against the wall, and I remember being in a dark room. I was standing on newspaper. There were like old men around me, and my hands were tied up above my head, and they were just like touching my chest. And it would just, these little bits of memory would just keep coming back and back and back. And I remember, like whenever they'd come up, just feeling extremely, just like guilty and ashamed because I knew this wasn't acceptable at all. You know, it's not anything that was playing on TV or, you know, something that
we people talk about.
Right. Right. It was just, it was such a dark memory. Mm-hmm. That I was just like, I can't bring this up to anybody because I'm just going to be a sicko. I'm messed up, you know? So now that I know more about it, it's like putting pieces together and making more sense.
Yeah. And so Emily came to me with that. That was the puzzle piece that she kind of brought to me and said, you know, I have these memories. And I don't even think I've said this to you, but literally the day that you texted me, like my whole soul like dropped to the floor. And I was like texting Lori. I was talking to Patrick and I was like, holy shit. Like this is like, I've seen this picture. So, you know, we've stated several times that during the abuse that occurred to me, pictures and videos were taken of these things. And they would often use these pictures or pictures of other children to show to me, to either show me how to do something that they were requiring or show me a picture of another child and say, you know, if you don't do it, she'll have to or we'll hurt her, whatever. And so when Emily shared this memory with me, my heart hit the floor because it was like, I've seen that picture, the newspaper and the hands tied above the head, standing up against the wall. I've seen that picture. So my memory is a snapshot of the Polaroid picture that Emily is describing. And so it was like, we started putting these puzzle pieces together and it was just, I mean, horrendous and yet also affirming and validating, but also like
that's not something you ever want to have affirmed or validated.
Jesus, no, right. Yeah, right. I mean, not at all. Like, but it wasn't shocking to me. It was like I knew it, but I hadn't put that puzzle piece in yet.
Mm-hmm. Just a file that you hadn't opened.
Yeah, exactly. It was like I knew it, but didn't know it at the same time. And so that is how you and I kind of became
reconnected.
Right. I mean, a little bit. We had been kind of reconnecting through the podcast, and you had sent me some really encouraging things, and also some other memories of things that we'll get to. But
so, can we just stop and talk about how does it feel to say those things out loud to everybody listening?
Right, like, it feel very slimy.
Yeah,
you know, like because it's it feels like something I should have kept secret, and like once it was out there, I felt like I've just had to keep it like repeating it, and it's just like I'd rather just hide under a blanket. But it needs to be said, it needs to be brought to light. And
Well, and obviously it's not your shame. Like, yeah. You didn't do this.
But it was a shame I got to carry my whole childhood, exactly. You know?
Yeah. It's like we know that. I know that as an adult. My adult brain knows that, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the feeling.
I know.
Maybe someday it will.
I don't want us to sit in that for a second. And for people out there listening to also sit in that and to recognize what it takes to do what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Both of you. To talk about this.
No, absolutely. So... Okay.
Other things that came to mind when you started podcasting was, like my parents were also very close with Herb and Heidi Asbach, like to the point of, I called them aunt and uncle. Like I knew them from same, like very little, like as soon as we moved to the island, because my mom went to school with Herb. And so when they had like reconnected at Tops and it was like, hey, you got kids, I got kids, let's get together. And, so our families were so close growing up. So that was another just like humongous shock, wave to shock, but not shock, you know, like, to the family, just being like, oh my God, like, how did we miss this? Because we were so close. But then the more you think about it, you're like, oh shit, that makes a lot of sense. You know, like that whole household growing up and being in it, was just so male dominated, like felt my heart goes out to Heidi with that. Like, because it was just, she came after Adam in like that lineup of who's important in the house.
So talk about the family. Cause people don't know who Adam
so
is.
First of all, Herb Asbach, just a reminder, is someone that I've named publicly as an offender. So that's who we're talking about. And so Heidi is his wife, and then you can continue with family.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So she was always subordinate to him, and like it just had a very misogynistic dynamic in that house. And like he always had a weird kind of creepy vibe, and we were together forever, but it was just like, well, he's just weird, you know, he's just a little out there, just fine. And then Heidi and my mom just became very close.
And Adam is their son.
Adam is their son. So and we've seen that in that the church in general, in that church at Whitehaven, mm-hmm. was like the men are more important and just come first.
But like to a crazy degree, like we're not talking about just like,
right.
You know, but there is a definite, I mean, even in my family, and this is maybe even to the next level, but there's a thing about firstborn boys, right? Like my brother's life was a whole different life than mine, mm-hmm. because he's a firstborn boy. He's not only a firstborn son, he's also a firstborn grandson. And so like, wow, was his life golden, you know? So there is that consistent theme throughout these families and these churches and essentially this group of people, right? That's a theme. So
yes.
Anyway.
A twisted, sick theme that became very, very toxic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also have, like, this very vivid memory of, like, because they had a pool in their backyard, and so we would go get changed up in their bathroom upstairs, which, and I remember changing into my swimsuit and just, like, looking down, and he was, like, just standing in the yard, like, just steady, making, eye contact, just, like, watching and being,
there's
like...
no shade or
no shame.
What?
Well, just, like, a total... It was just open. And it was... You know, when that happens, you'd think they'd go, like, oh shit. Turn away. But I remember just being, like, steady staring and being like, okay, this is weird. But I was, like, you know, middle school at the time, so it was, like, you know, just a stupid kid.
Except
creepy.
You knew. Like, let's just acknowledge that... This is part of the problem. Intuitively, you knew that this was not okay, mm-hmm. but you had been taught to just not question, mm-hmm. to not push back, to not acknowledge your own spidey sense.
Yeah. Right.
Not okay.
No. Yeah, no. And trust the men involved.
Yeah.
In your life. Just a full... They had the three kids. And, like, Adam had his own room, and then the two sisters had shared a room, and they also had this office that was upstairs, too, that we were, like, not allowed to go into. It just had, like, a hutch and a computer, and it was like, this is his work computer. But it was like, I don't know. It was just, it definitely had a don't go in there vibe. Mm-hmm. Not just vibe, like, you could not go in that room. And we were, like, sneaking in a couple times, so, and just being rage told off about it, so.
Which... without the backstory, just seems like,
it's just like, invaded his space.
Yeah, right. But put the backstory together, and now it looks different.
Yeah. Well, that's like everything, though, right? I mean, the room off the basement in my house, right? Like, it could have, I mean, without all the rest, it's, I mean, it's still creepy. It's like an off-limits room in a basement, like, that was also a preschool, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. And then to hear Alicia, so if you listen to the episode, you know, Alicia said the same thing about off-limits, weird bedroom in the basement.
Yeah, So, yeah, it's like a consistent theme that you keep seeing. And so, again, without all of the rest, it's maybe somewhat benign.
Right, it didn't come to mind at the time.
Exactly.
It's just like, oh,
right. But now when you put it together with everything else, it's like, oh, okay, that's,
So I feel like we jumped in with both feet, which I think it's important for people to have perspective on why we're even having this conversation today. But let's go like a little bit to the light world.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure exactly when we became friends. Do you remember when you moved to the island? Because it was probably somewhere around then.
I was in second grade.
Yeah, that sounds right.
We were very young.
Yeah. And so I'm like a year younger than you. Yes. So I was probably in like first grade. That like 6 year old. Evelyn's in first grade right now. So I'm like imagining me as like
I'm a first grader too.
Sassy 6 year old.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. So you know we had a lot of play dates. Like I said, we hung out. We were in youth group together. We were in the youth puppet group together.
We were the daughters of the super secret puppet group. Like, we all were the secret kid version of that.
Yeah.
With way worse puppets.
It was, I don't know if we've really talked too much about the puppet ministry, like, publicly, but so my mother, along with several of the offenders' wives, which we actually are going to do an episode about
the women
involved in all of this. And so my mother, along with several offenders' wives, were part of this like super like
elite.
Yeah,
that's the word I was
looking for. You're in the kids club if you're in the puppet.
This elite puppet ministry.
It was like, do you know? I think this is the person who plays Skipper or whatever.
Skipper. I know who played Skipper.
Right, yeah. We knew. We were privy to that.
We knew. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so they were part of that. And then, and that came a long time actually before Emily and I became.
Yeah.
The puppet ministry started at Bible Presbyterian. A lot of those women who moved over from Bible Presbyterian Church to Whitehaven kind of continued into Whitehaven. So like Cal Kern's wife, Sherry Kern, and my mom, you know, moved over to Whitehaven and then started up this ministry. So Emily's mom, Tracy, came into the puppet ministry sort of after the fact. Like, this elite group was already a thing.
Right. And but then, she brought mad skills.
Oh, my God. Mad skills.
Like,
yeah.
Like, she could make a puppet, like, zip line. She turned the baptistry into a waterfall. Yeah. Like, and anything you could think of, she just
there
put all her
time. There was some kind of dragon situation.
There was. Do you remember like, there dragon? Was flash paper fire involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
She so elevated
it. Wow. She did elevate. Yeah.
That she makes sense. Huge, like, tapestries in our kitchen and just be painting these landscapes. It was
so
wild.
She's like incredibly artistic and creative, and so they kind of, you know, looped her into this elite group because of her creativity and her ability to elevate the puppet ministry. That's we were the children of the elite,
which sounds so lovely until you think about what was happening behind the scenes during the time when the wives were doing their puppet thing.
For sure.
So I don't know that we've talked about directly about the role that the puppet ministry played in the abuse itself. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, it was like this super secret club that was of the elite, like we said. But, you know, the puppet ministry had these late night practices at the church where all the wives of these offenders would be practicing at the church, and the kids had free run of the church. And there is abuse that happened in the church at these times, right, as well as other times in the church. But, it was kind of like the moms were off doing puppets.
But your mom did not know anything about that.
No, that was another just huge shock. I mean, we would go to the practices, and again, just free reign of the church and just at night, wherever we wanted to go.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about what you remember even about being in the church?
We were alone a lot in the church. I feel like we were hiding in the church bathroom, not just during puppet, but that was like our
spot. So I actually remember hiding in the church bathroom a lot during organized events.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, let's get away.
Yeah. Like, this is garbage. Let's let's go hide because we don't want to play organized games. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be criticized by the youth pastor. We don't mm-hmm. want to be singled out because of whatever. It was like I remember.
Get away from the toxic energy and just yes. hide in the bathroom.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
It was like a little, our escape. I remember being in there in middle school, like when we were in there, and this is one of the things I had messaged you about, mm-hmm. Like right away, where you had asked me if you thought this stall could hold your weight if you hung yourself from it. And it just was like, you know, me in middle school / I was just like, what? Yeah. You know, but yeah, just such a, like, just a distinct line that'll stay with me forever. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, again, for people maybe jumping into this, I did attempt to do that in middle school right before I made my first disclosure. So, yeah, it's just, you know, again.
So for all those people who are saying, where is all the corroborating information? Well, there's some corroborating information for you people. Mm-hmm. Somebody was there who remembers. So, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, you had a place to go in the church to try to get away from, like, again, that can sound very normal and benign if you're not understanding the backstory, but there is a backstory. And so why were two girls feeling like they had to hide out?
Mm-hmm. The other thing about the puppet ministry that we haven't mentioned is the expensive camera.
All right.
Yep. Let's go there.
Expensive equipment.
Yeah.
That seemed out of place for who is bringing them.
And for puppets.
Right, for puppets.
And that's information that has been commented on to us mm-hmm. from other people who were like, yeah, we always wondered why this person had such expensive camera equipment for videoing puppets. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this same person, if you follow our social media, is the person who, I think it was actually you that sent that to me.
Yeah, I'm in like a Buy Nothing Grand Island group, and which is just a way to pass free stuff around to only.
What are we talking about?
The VHS.
Camera.
Oh, the VHS. Yeah. So yeah, this picture comes up from a known offender, like I know, and here's all these empty video cases.
Yeah.
It's like, and it instantly was like, I know what that is, and. And to see the response back to be like, you don't know what you're talking about. And these held, what was it, like
Bible studies
from another offender's wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Just so quick to come back to that.
Yeah.
That post was taken down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rightfully so. But yeah, the expensive camera equipment that all came from this one offender who I haven't named publicly, but who was someone who definitely assisted my dad in the video equipment and in the photography equipment to be able to, again, photograph and video the abuse that was taking place. And so, again, corroborating details, Emily and many other people are like, oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, they had all this expensive, high-end camera equipment to video a puppet show.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
Or their weird, choral. They did, like, a choral concert in the basement, and they had all this high-tech cameras. Like, and I was like, why is this here?
What is happening?
Right. I guess it's before, like, camera phones, but it's, like, still.
Yeah. But there's, like, a difference between, like, a handy cam and, like, a professional-grade, Channel 2 News camera. So, mm-hmm. And it was that. It was literally this professional,
that just makes me feel yucky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to, like, more about, like, us knowing each other in the porn world.
Right, right.
That's more fun.
Right. Yeah. We would do, I remember being in your house a lot, like, a ton. Like, I don't think I had any other friends.
I was forced to hang out with a lot of other people, just to say. I didn't really have a lot of other friends either.
Not real friends.
Looking in, it looked like you had a ton of people your life. But I remember, like, we did everything, like swimming, tennis. There was a playground across the street and your playground in your house. And we do big walks through Buckhorn and bike rides. Like, why were we allowed to do all that? We just, like, go wherever we wanted to go.
I know. I do think about that sometimes.
Yeah. Like,
I would never let my kids
I'll tell Martin. He's like, yeah, no, that's never happening.
No, never.
Absolutely not.
No.
But yeah, we'd go down and we hung out like everywhere in your house, like your room, the bathroom, your parents' room. And which I remember being in the classroom downstairs, which my siblings went to the preschool there, but I was too old to go to the preschool. So I didn't go that There was that side room that I remember we were going into getting something, and you were like being, we had to be quick about it. And there was like a little side, like a room within the room that was like, don't go there. Mm-hmm. I think we were like singing to Celine Dion or something.
Probably. That sounds like us. Right. We were fan friggin' tastic. Oh,
yeah. But yeah, like your brother's room was completely off limits. Yeah. I remember that. But we like would camp out in the backyard, and like I remember walking your rabbit.
Oh my gosh! Like on the pink leash,
right on the leash. I mean, like, what are we doing?
Because quick side story. I like desperately wanted a dog. No one would buy me a dog, so instead they bought me parakeets. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Couldn't get a dog. Then finally it was like we'll get a bunny, and like I just desperately wanted a dog, so we take the bunny for the walk. You know what I mean? Dragging the bunny along the sidewalk. Like for all the animal rights activists out there, like I'm sorry, I was a kid. You know. Anyway, yeah, that's a funny memory.
Yeah, no, that's silly. But we used to like we would go, like your parents would take us places too, like together. Like we would go swimming, we would go get ice cream at Anderson's. So I remember this one time we were driving to the aquatic center. Your dad was driving us at night, and it was like a last minute, like a quick, because it was late, and your mom wasn't there, which I thought at the time was like, this is odd. But we were coming down Grand Island Boulevard, and I think about this moment every time I drive down this spot in this like on the street. Yeah, it's that exact same spot or that spot, and he hit a deer. Like the deer just like jumped out, and it was like not a lot of damage. Like we got out and looked at it. It was just like a little, like the bumper was. But I remember him being so upset and so angry, like enraged. Like I hadn't really seen him mm-hmm. react like that, except one other time, which I'll add in. But I thought it was weird that like, I mean, I knew he was an auto guy. To be like, why are you reacting so like so flustered with this like car repair? You know, it feels like it could or it could have been more like of what. So
it was just an odd situation.
It was off. Yeah, definitely.
Looking back as an adult,
like, why were we just with him?
Right.
Why were we going to the pool late at night?
Right.
Why would he freak out about something an inconvenience?
Generally minor. Yeah. Right.
I remember this other time. Then this is another thing. I reached out to you with the podcast or when it started that. We were in your room and you were like drawing pictures and you had drawn this very simple drawing of just like missionary style sex, and that you said your brother told you about this and this is what you do. And we were probably in like elementary school. I remember just being like, oh my God, like at the time, like the way you presented it was just like exciting and like, oh my God, like this is what it is. And I remember being like, I had no idea that that's what happens.
Is that normal?
I wouldn't put that in the camp of clearly abusive, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Older sibling knows more. He was what, 3.5 years older, you know, knows more, goes to school, might come home and tell things, right? You're saying that it was a pretty straightforward picture. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that was an indicator of something. Mm-hmm.
But looking back on it now, I was like, was that you reaching out
mm-hmm. right.
as a kid to be like, what do you think about this? And maybe you'll tell your parent, you know, that's speculating, but also like after hearing more and more about it, it's just like, was that a little kid reaching out to another little kid?
Absolutely. It's again, one of those things that seems relatively benign. So if you're asking me, is it so out of the ordinary for an older sibling to tell a younger sibling about things like that? No, not really. It happens. But put it in the context of everything else that we now know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously there was something that was going on there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Horseback riding.
Right.
Let's go there.
Yeah. And Wendy's afterwards.
Wendy's, yes. Frosty's at Wendy's.
We did, we rode horses together in Lewiston. I think the connection was she knew your mom, or she went to Whitehaven. I know I didn't know her personally, but I think my mom must have known her.
My parents knew her, yeah.
Knew her? Just her?
Nope. Her husband was an offender.
So we would, our moms would take us up there, I want to say it was every week.
Every week, yeah.
Yeah, for English riding lessons and, like, jumping. And it was a lot of fun. Like, and it wasn't like a show up and just get on the horse and go. It was like, we were responsible for everything. Yeah. We had to like pick it out and clean the stalls and, you know, brush them out and put all the stuff on. And, Like, we almost went in on a horse together, one that we both rode. Well, beautiful Merlin.
Aw, justice for Merlin.
Justice for Merlin. Yeah, so...
You'll have to explain that.
Yeah, well, I'll say that. Like, my mom remembers a big injury you had. We always rode together. Mm-hmm. And we had fallen a lot because there's a lot of learning. Like, it was very cushioned and padded. We were in an indoor arena. Like, I remember falling off a lot. I can very distinctly remember a memory where I went to do the jump, and Evan was like, oh, no, we're not doing that. Oh, and I just go over his head and on the ground, and he'd just look at me like, what are you doing down there? You know, it was like that kind of – but you get back up because it's just this cushioned ground, and yeah. You know, so it wasn't a big deal. But, like, so my mom tells me that you had a bad injury, that you'd fallen off the horse. I don't know if you want to talk about – what the injury was.
I don't, but it was part of an abuse situation in which my teeth went through my lip. I ended up with like 15 stitches in my bottom lip. I had broken teeth on top. I ended up having like 3 root canals on my 3 top teeth. Just absolutely, I mean, mangled. Mm-hmm. My face was pretty mangled. Yeah. So, and it was from abuse. It was from something that happened that went very, very awry, in a situation. And my parents played it off or told everybody that it was a horseback riding accident because mm-hmm. I did ride horses. And my mom told everyone that I fell off the horse and landed face first. Which
like
is,
we were always there.
Yeah.
Like, I would have seen that right. And my mom would have seen that.
Right.
So that's a big accusation.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, yeah, that's where it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't, horrible. You know, and I've actually seen the medical reports from from that emergency room visit, and the doctor kind of is like, this doesn't really make a ton of sense, but again, it's like, you know, the 90s, and the parents are here saying this is what happened, and she's, you know, I'm going with the public story because that's always what I've done is mm-hmm. this is a story that we're going to tell, and so that's the story. And I said to your mom actually the other night that, like, I've told that story, the public story of, like, it was a horseback riding incident so many times that it is this, like, vetted sort of. And then when I really think about it, it's like, no, that wasn't what happened at all, actually. We weren't even riding that day. Like you said, we went together. We mm-hmm. were always there together. Mm-hmm. We took lessons together. We would not have been a situation in which me and my parents would have been at the barn alone mm-hmm. riding. Mm-hmm. That just wasn't how that went. And so, yeah, it doesn't make sense, but they made sense. They
convinced people.
They convinced people, yeah, which is kind mm-hmm. of... kind of what they did.
When you had said that, my first thought was like when I think of horseback riding, it was this great memory with you, but it's like now looking back on it, it's like, was that just a place for that they could use to say, let's, you can write off these, like it puts such a stink on it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to wreck it for you even more, but, it's not a good memory for me because it was a very painful thing because I was generally pretty injured. And so riding horses was actually really hard to do and very just physically taxing when I was already physically taxed. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I do think that in some ways it was
a cover.
Yeah, an easy cover. I also think that I know because I've looked into horseback riding for my daughter that it is not cheap at all. Like, and so like when I think about again, like the financial troubles that the business was having and all of that, like where did that money come from? Mm-hmm. Right. Like where, so, and I do know where it came from, but, why that, right? Like why horseback riding? That doesn't even make sense.
Well, it was accessible then.
It was accessible, yeah. And my mom knew, and the guy, you know, her husband was with mm-hmm. all of it. It all makes the whole puzzle make sense. But, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. It just makes me think about how much, like, information control was being exerted here in terms of your abuse and the the ways that it was being explained away, but just in the church in general too, mm-hmm. that there was this, like you said, very male dominant, very like there are a few leader families and they are sort of the ones that run the show mm-hmm. and everything else falls underneath that. And so that whole idea is just a part of what was the church culture. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I was at Whitehaven from like 1992 to 2005. I was in there my entire childhood, adult. I did every possible thing you could do in that church, being involved with,
This was just the church culture, and this is just what it looked like. So can we talk a little bit about what yeah. the church culture was like?
Yeah, I'll give you, my Whitehaven Road experience. Yes. Yeah, because please. I went to Whitehaven from like 1992 to 2005 because, as I said before, my mom knew Herb and they were going to that church. So it was just like we moved to the area from Pittsburgh. Now we have a new church home. I did everything you could, like anything you could do that got you out of service. I would do those things. Like nursery. I loved working in the nursery, but again, looking back, never vetted, no background check. It was just like, let me hand this middle school, high schooler a baby and here's a diaper bag and we'll see you in an hour. My mom has a memory of being in the puppetry group and she's making her puppet dance and Anona Fenter is like, no dancing. Yeah. Like the puppet couldn't dance. So yeah, of course people couldn't dance. But I was very much involved in the middle school, like Olympian Club was big. That was every Wednesday nights, their youth and middle school, youth group I was part of. When I got older, I did the, I was also like a leader in the Cornerstone groups. Like I had my own little group that I would mentor. And then I was also part of an age my age that I was being mentored by the like older women in the church. And like those meetings were like purity meetings, mm-hmm. you know, like they were accountability ones. Like how are our devotions? How are we fitting in school or how we're feeling? But a lot of them were like purity meetings with, and like staying pure for your husband. And we always the narrative of find your knight in shining armor, find your husband who believes in God, and then all you have to do is follow him. Like, you don't have to do any thinking yourself because he is the head of the household. He follows God, so you can follow him. And that's kind of the order it was in families, too. Like, we saw it in the other families that went there, that the men were in charge and the women would just follow. Like, you had to submit yourselves to God and your husbands because they were above you.
So, okay. For the church people who are out there mm-hmm. who do in fact subscribe to that perspective, it's important that we unpack the reality that this was a toxic version of that. Again, mm-hmm. We're not going to talk right now about that as a general principle because there are a lot of people listening who would say that that is a biblical principle. However, can we talk about the fact that it was a very toxic culture mm-hmm. where the misogyny that is reflected in that women can't think for themselves, they don't have skills or ability to lead, they should just basically sit down and shut up. Mm-hmm. Was a perfect breeding ground for the abuse that we now understand
right.
was going on.
Right. Like I remember I had been involved in all that and I had my own group that I was leading and, I was graduating and going to school for theater and, I was told I wasn't able to lead anymore, because I was going to school for theater and Steve Asbach told me that he was also a group leader. He was a little older than me. And they had talked to his father and, the leadership at the time told me that if I was going to school for theater, that means I'm supporting homosexuals in the department and supporting homosexuality. And so I couldn't lead the small groups. And it was just like soul crushing. Cause it was like, I had put everything into this church and like developed these relationships under like a lot of just, I have a lot of friends there. Like I tried really hard to fit in and it was just like, you have to leave.
So let's just highlight the fact that Steve Asbach, the son of Gary Asbach, is the person who told you this, who talked to his father, Gary. Gary Asbach is still very heavily involved. And up until recently, or maybe recently, was the head of the elder board at Cornerstone Church on Grand Island.
stance and that the taking away of that position for me has a bigger sting, I think, like now because of the indoctrination and just like the hard programming of find the knight in shining armor, find the man. Now I know that I'm bisexual. I'm attracted to all genders, but it was just like, no, you can't be. So there was a lot of untangling to be done well into adulthood and still working through to be like, because the church had just laid so many knots for me, you know, right, in the way. So that whole, I can't teach because I support homosexuality is just like, well, tables have the turned of tabled, right, you know?
And okay. So what about support or encouragement or care for you at the point that they told you couldn't serve
anymore? Oh, nothing. It was a complete drop. I didn't have contact with anybody else. All the girls that I like led dropped out of my life completely. And I would make sure that we were in a public space. Like we met all over the place. And it was just like that. It was just completely gone. Like it all fell apart. Yeah. So yeah, it was just like, here's a huge hole. And I'm going to college, still a naive little Christian girl, but now I'm alone. Like I don't have this, even the tiny support from
the church. So like, okay, again, just to unpack that. I don't know. I've posted things before about, like, is this really, like, for those people who do still attend church, who call themselves Christians, is this really the way that you envision your church leadership and your church treating human beings, right? Is that what people who call themselves Christians want their faith and their belief system to look like? Is just tossing a young woman who is trying and doing everything she can to serve the church, to be in the right way, to follow all the rules, to do all the right things. And now this one thing that isn't even what you're saying it is, you just toss her out on the street. Is that what Jesus would do, right? We have the WWJD bracelets. Hello, 90s, right?
Right.
Is that really, like, is that what we believe? Because that is what we're seeing across the board with so many churches, but specifically this one, mm-hmm, right? I get real hot talking about, yep, this church because that is a load of garbage. And so to now still be protecting that church is no. Right. Nope.
Right.
Sorry. I had to get that off my chest.
No, I'm glad.
It's a problem. It is a huge problem. It's a problem in many church cultures.
People ask why we're attacking the church on the podcast. We're not attacking the church. We're attacking garbage like this. We are calling out, not even attacking, we're calling out this insanity that is happening, and it's just happening in secret and behind closed doors, and oh, she just doesn't attend here anymore, mm-hmm, and so it's fine. And everybody just keeps on raising their hands on Sundays and pretending that it's fine. Mm-hmm. It is not fine. This is not what any religion should look like, in my opinion, but continue.
Well, and where's the repair?
Right.
Where's the repair? So if there is repentance, that means turning from,
right,
to something else and doing repair. Has anybody come to repair anything with you?
No.
Do you, okay, even want them to?
No.
No. I know.
Not at all. I've moved on.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just saying that's, you know, again, it's like we have a big listener base of church people. And so a lot of people are listening closely and it's like, is this what you want from your church? Is, mm-hmm, this the kind of behavior and the kind of thought process and the belief system that you are subscribing to?
So there is so again, for the Christian people out there who are listening, there is a Julie Roy's podcast. One of the episodes, she interviews, I think Wade Mullins is his name, and he talks about the importance of truth and authenticity in how churches respond to allegations of spiritual abuse or other kinds of abuse within the church. Go listen to it. Go find that episode because it is so good in talking about how, okay, if you got it wrong, like we've kind of alluded to the fact that there were cultural differences in the 90s that had parents allowing their kids more freedoms than we would allow them now. Okay, so a little bit we can acknowledge that there were cultural things going on back then that may have influenced some of these responses. Okay, but then go back and acknowledge that you got it wrong and that you wounded people along the way as a result of that. Like, I can't imagine what your journey was like as a result of now being rejected for things that you hadn't
like
even
they
come to
programmed,
terms with.
Yeah, right. They programmed in, and then it's like, no, yeah.
So can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what was the fallout?
It left me, I was this little steps, no, zero confidence, lonely little child. Which I was like a real, like, so little baby adult.
Incongruent with what I see right here in front of me.
Well, I had to do all the work
I know.
Myself out of the church. Yeah, it led me down really, really bad paths because it was like, I'm just going to follow what I've been taught, which has been programmed into me in a really harmful way, which is trust Christian men, really, is what it comes down to. Like, and I had to find the husband, you know, find the knight in shining armor. And, like, I remember being in these stupid little Christian chat rooms back when we were given the internet and like totally groomed by these, like, definitely probably older Christian godly quote men, to be sub to them. And, yeah, it was nasty. And even coming out of that, it was just like, I still need to find someone because that's the goal. I got to find a good Christian boy. And, I ended up meeting somebody who, yeah, it was terrible. He was just like verbally, physically, mentally abusive. We would have to, like, he would meet me privately. Like, he'd take me to church, which oddly enough was like the church my aunt went. I like randomly ran into them and be like, what is happening? But yeah, he was a good Christian boy. But he, yeah, like told me that if I was a real Christian and like really loved him and really loved God, that I would sleep with him, that I would perform oral sex on him. And at that point in my life, it was just like oral sex was totally off the table. Absolutely not. It's disgusting. Your mouth is not meant for that. And it was just like physically forcing me to do that. And then afterwards being like praying over me and thanking God for it. And like, so, you know, at the time I remember being like, I got to kick him out of the car and run him over. You know, that's where I'm at mentally. I need to do that. But you don't, you're just like, well, this is what God wanted, right? Because he was a good Christian. He said so. And, you know, maybe he's the one. I remember like telling someone still, maybe he's the one, even after all of the just completely, like, he took advantage of all of that naiveness and the fact that I was a good Christian girl. And, yeah, so just the fallout of just the programmed harm, you know, and the indoctrination.
And again, not being given permission to trust your instinctive self-protection.
Right.
Because you got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to run him over with my car. Perfectly reasonable response to being raped.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you had been programmed to say, oh, but no.
Yeah.
That's not an okay response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he's praying over me now and thanking God for it. So it must be okay, right?
Yep.
So.
Ugh. I hate that you had to live through that.
Me too. Yeah. But I'm thankful for you as a human being.
Thankful for you.
So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for sharing yours. No, seriously, and giving courage to other people to come forward and, you know, and to protect the kids, to protect other people. You know, it's all about everyone's got grandkids now and you got to keep them safe. And, you know, I have major regrets in my life not coming forward and saying something about him because I know he did it again. I mean, Martin and I got married where I'd met him. And I remember asking the person in charge, like, is this guy still here? And they were like, oh, I know exactly who you're talking about. Like, so I know it had, like, and that sticks with me. It's something I have to carry as a person that he's still out there doing that. So I'm hugely proud of you for having a voice and saying something and speaking up, bringing it to light.
I mean, yeah, I think that the connection between you and I and the putting of the puzzle pieces together is really, like, the whole of what we're doing here, right? Mm-hmm. Of having people be able to now put words to their experience, having it, even if the puzzle pieces don't fit into my story, they fit into some story, and, you know, yours do fit into my story, but, yeah, just the finding of what we have found through this has been, wow.
Yeah.
The power of using your power and voice to speak truth to people is not gossip. Mm-hmm. It is not undermining the church. It is not undermining a good person. It is speaking the truth so that people can be safer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Yep.
And it's uncomfortable, but it's not because people are talking about it. It's uncomfortable because it was abuse.
Right.
We should be uncomfortable. So thank you both.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Awesome. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.